Welcome back to City Living with Churchill, a weekly podcast that chronicles the different experiences and communities of being a young professional in New York City. In last week's episode, Gia Love mentioned the importance of the New York Now life scene. This week on City Living with Churchill, we revisit a favorite episode from 2020 with Trappy Hour founder Leon. Our conversation focuses on the impact of the pandemic to the nightlife scene and the importance of Black queer representation. When I first moved to New York City, one of the first parties I ever went to, not necessarily a party, but one of the first bar or promoter events I went to was called Trappy Hour. I remember it was Thursday evening. My friends were thinking places to visit. One of my friends had sent me a link saying, have you been to this place? I was like, no, but I was open to checking it out. You know, it's Thursday. And I remember showing up. It's so packed. So packed. Before even getting, I was already sweating. People were sweating, but people were having a good time. The drinks are flowing. The bar is full. There's good music. Lights are everywhere. It's just, everything is just flowing. It just seemed to be such a wonderful and freeing experience. You had the likes of politicians in that room. You had the likes of porn stars, educators, investment bankers, all these different types of queer Black people all in this tiny space just being free. And I was curious, who was such a wonderful time? What energy brings all of this together to make such a nice and fun experience? And one part of that is the promoter of that event, Mr. Leon. He is very social. He walks through the crowd as all of this happens. He pours drinks to have people rock the boat. And he tries to always make a connection. And I always was very, you know, attracted to that light. And he has always been so kind and has been one of my favorite people in the city. And he's our guest for today. In today's episode, we talk about the dating scene in New York. We talk about how he got started being a promoter. We talk about sort of the crazy stories from promoting. And most importantly, we talk about the importance of Black queer representation, whether it's in media or any form of consumer information in sense. I also, right, was very curious about him. So this really was a very sort of fangirly moment for me in a sense that I was like, oh my God, this is so cool to learn something about you, because usually you just see people at the bar or they're promoting their party. You never get a chance to get to know them. And so it was a great quality time spent with them. This has been a wonderful time. You know, this party, just to give you some sense of the energy, has had the likes of Tiffany Haddish, Issa Rae, and Cohen all attend. It's been just a wonderful and wonderful great time. I hope you enjoy. I am here with Leon. Many know him as the Trappy Hour Master. If you've experienced any sort of social life in New York City, you know him. If you're in the internet and you have friends in New York City, you know him through his wonderful Instagram page. And the many stories that he shares have been wonderful. They're fun, they're raunchy, and always have some insight to them. And so when I was thinking about, you know, what are the people that I would like to bring to this podcast to talk about New York City, to learn a little bit more about them, I had him at the top of my list because I think you're a wonderful person. How did you end up in New York City? What brought you to the city? When? How?
Well, I moved here in 2009, right when I graduated college.
How old were you when you moved to the city?
23.
23? That's a fun
age to move. Yeah, but
how long have you been in the city then?
10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe 11 this year.
Have you always stayed in the Harlem area? Oh, so all 10 years in Harlem.
Yeah, I used to live in Spanish Harlem, which was a great introduction into New York because the U.S. is very Caribbean Spanish.
Yeah.
So it was just like, it was almost people who I was familiar with. Mm-hmm. So it made the transition easier.
You never were curious about living in the other boroughs?
No. I just like, you know, this is easy to navigate. You can walk to anything here. There's like a big community here. There's social life. And I think Harlem has its own soul and everybody wants to, I think you're just lucky to be in Harlem. I think the other boroughs are great. I just don't know about them, but some people are Brooklyn people. Mm-hmm. Some people are Bronx people. Some people are Heights. Some people are Harlem. I guess Harlem and Heights are the same, but whatever. No one thought I was going to move to New York. I moved back to Key West for a month after I graduated. And I was like, a big reason I left so soon was because nobody thought I was going to. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to get stuck. And I was like, I'm going to be a designer. I'm going to move to New York and show everybody. But I have no money. Like, it was the worst thing ever. But I could not have done it again like that. So I don't think I would have got, like, I wouldn't, if I had to choose to move somewhere like that again, I would never do it.
What would have changed?
I probably would have worked. I probably went to law school. Or I don't even know if I had guidance like that. So I can't even say at that point. There's mm-hmm. people telling you what to do, when, how to do it.
Yeah.
So I just knew I just didn't want to be in Key West. And I left it. Not because it's not a great place, but it wasn't for me anymore.
You had all these dreams and aspirations when you moved. What was very shocking to you when you moved to New York City?
That you couldn't stop the subway by pulling on the string like a bus.
You do that in Key West?
I don't, like, there's no public transportation in Key West, but the buses do have, like, you pull it and the bus stops.
Yeah.
So that's how you get on the subway.
Did you actually pull the train?
Yeah, and it would stop when you needed it to stop. I didn't understand the concept. But, like, when people was like, you need to go to, if something was on 133rd Street. Mm-hmm. And then people tell me, you need to go to 133rd Street. And then if the train it stops at 135th, I was like, what? Like, it didn't stop. So that's what I had to figure out.
Once you got here, did you already have friends living in New York City?
I had one friend mm-hmm. moved into an apartment. We had no business moving in to with this guy who was like, he had a 3-bedroom. Mm-hmm. So I moved in because I didn't have any money. And I was like, oh, yeah, I have a job. And I'm getting this and this and that. Never gave him, like, I didn't even have a bed. He had to give me a bed. And my friend, no, he was in law school and med school. Mm-hmm. He did that for like a month. But he eventually, like, we moved here, like, both straight out of college and just went different paths. So one day he just moved out of the apartment. And I was like, what? Like, he's moved out one day. I answered the door. Someone was knocking at the door. And this white man answers the door. And I'm like, who? He's like, I'm here to see your friend. I'm here to see my roommate's name. I'm like, oh. He's like, I'm here to see him about the room. And I was like, you moving? He didn't tell me. And he just left. When he left, abruptly, the white guy moved in. And then I think later they kicked me out because I didn't have any money. But that's how I started interning for a designer. Mm-hmm. And then that was just like, that turned into my job for the next 10 years. I worked for him for 10 years. But then
he didn't pay you?
He did pay me. He did. Oh. I eventually got the job, but it was a small business. So I was like, I dedicated.
I was like, we have a lawsuit.
I wouldn't have been here. I would have been just sitting around. It was a great way of like mixing. I could still be creative because there's some things I didn't know technically. And then when I learned the technical things, I could make like quality stuff. So I loved it. But I just stayed there. So, and it's coming up recently. I was like, I was laid off, then brought back, then they went out of business. So that's been like my thing. But I did that for like a long time. So it wrote me from my 20s into my 30s. And by this time, I was also doing Trappy Hour and then almost promoting almost full time before the pandemic. So I knew, like, I like working for myself, but I always feel bad about mm-hmm. not going, like, the corporate route or not going that professional route so I could have that experience. Because I think you do need a lot of that to work for yourself if you don't go to, like, if you didn't go to business school or something. Like, there's a whole culture of, like, working that I didn't have.
So how would you describe the Black queer dating experience in New York City?
It's varied. I would say it's varied, but I also, like, I've been in love, I've been heartbroken, and I'm glad for all those experiences because I'm like, okay, I can see what other people are going through. Like, after you've been through some shit, you can see what, like, okay, I see what, like, I can see what you're going through. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people say they have trouble dating here and stuff like that, but everyone's figuring it out. Like, everyone is, like, even knowing, like, who I've been from relationship to relationship or seeing what other people needed, it's just been about, like, I guess in the early 20s, like, finding yourself, even still now, because I think gay men, we don't have to, like, imagine you're a gay man, you're young, you're beautiful, and you, like, just everything is good, like, you're comfortable. Mm-hmm. You don't depend on anybody for really anything. You can come and go as you please. I think you, and like being a man as a, like a societal man, like being raised as a man in society,
yeah. We
just enjoy a lot of privilege that you don't even think about. Someone is trying to like get two guys together, just trying to figure out how to love another guy, and he's going to accept it, and it's work, and you guys not get like beat each other up and shit like that. And just figuring that out has been like, I think everyone's in some stage of that. And they say like, we date in a small circle, like Black queer people, we date in these little small groups, because I don't know if there's that many of us. But just trying to figure that out, like, who's healing from this relationship, who's doing, where are you, mm-hmm. and things like that. So I never say it's bad, but I don't do it a lot, but mainly now because I just keep too many people out. Like, I'm just too, like, I'm just a part of promoter. I don't think it's, but for me, it's just like,
how does that work, though? So how does dating work as a party promoter? You obviously run into a lot of people, and I'm sure there are people that find the party promoter sort of relationship
thing,
too. Like, how is, like, you know, how, like, when you sort of go on a date, or how do you approach dating in that sense, mm-hmm. that you're so out there socially?
I guess, well, I don't think I'm out there socially. But I could say, I guess it's, I meet people out, like, I don't even prefer, like, even before mm-hmm. this, I wasn't really on the apps, because last time I was on the app, somebody was like, you want to make $30 real quick? And I deleted it that day. And I was like, what am I going to do with $30, first of all? But I prefer to meet people out, I like meeting people out, but the thing about that is, usually I'm drunk when I'm meeting these people, and sometimes I'll see them again, and we had these deep conversations, and I'm like, oh, I think it was like, you know, drunk men don't tell lies, they say, but I just didn't remember the thing. So if I like, I don't know, I haven't really dated like that because I'm just too around people anyway. I haven't felt that missing mm-hmm. until recently because I want a baby.
Oh, we're ready for family?
Yes, been ready.
I've been ready.
I just want a baby.
You just want a baby? You want a baby by yourself or you want a baby with someone?
It could be by myself. It would just have to be like, set and secured to be by myself, that I don't have to worry about anything mm-hmm. coming up. Like, I don't want there to be any emergencies or anything. Like, I'm just like, we can handle like whatever's coming to us.
Yeah.
But I guess learning to be with someone is mm-hmm. everyone's dating thing. Well, older now, because like I talked to guys who are a little older than me, maybe like 10 to 15, maybe 20 years older than me. They all had girlfriends at a point. They would all, and it was like not common. It was common. Like, I've spoken to a few people with girlfriends, and then they get to come out and be just gay, or even fiancés, wives. Then they get to be gay later, like when they're like, whereas I hit the ground running in college, trying to navigate it. And even moving to New York was a different world, but I got to, you know, I didn't worry about getting arrested for being gay or like being like, my family, they, I guess, accept, but you know, it could be, they'd be happier, but they didn't kick me out or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or things these guys had to go through, but they're also in our dating pool. And then we got these younger guys, and like, they're not like, especially in New York. I dated a guy who was from New York when I moved here, and he was into maybe not PDA, but holding hands in public, and I wasn't comfortable with that.
Yeah.
It's not that I was closeted or anything. I just never did that before. I don't know. I'm like, someone's going to beat us up. That's all I can think about.
Yeah.
But he was, and I had to learn to be different that way.
What do you say to folks that think, you know, or I think this is the argument. I was one of those folks. When I say folks, I mean me. Mm-hmm. I think there is part of the issue with dating, being queer and dating in New York is the issue of choice. There's so many options and flavors. Therefore, you can't stick to one.
Well, I guess that's true. It's true. I think men think like it, but I think it's in different degrees. Like, either you want to sleep with them all, or you want to just keep searching until you find the best one.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that comes to the part of, we don't know how to be with each other in some instances. Mm-hmm. Like, straight people, they have just as many choices. And it's easier because they know who's like, oh, this is a woman, she's an option. Or this is an amazing option for us. They had to be like, is this a friend? Are we going to fuck? Are we going to be fucking the friends? Enemies? What are we going to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
And do we even like each other? I think that's for like a lot of queer relationships. And especially like just people you're around, you just mm-hmm. know, do I even like this person? Mm-hmm. Like, even if I'm dating, if they're my friend, like I feel lucky enough, like I get to be around people I like, genuinely like friends. And that's how I just have to keep, like, because I am around so many people. I'm like, okay, I know where to go to people I like. Like, I don't have to worry about them or anything like that. But there aren't, like, those aren't dating. I put people in boxes. I'm like, well, those aren't dating options. And I'm like, there's no one out there, like, there has to be a new person literally move here and then we click. And I'd be like, that. Mm-hmm. But it's tricky. I'm gonna say it's difficult.
Do you find to that point about, you know, people moving in, out of the city, do you think it's easier to click with someone that's out of the city, that's just new, that's fresh blood to the city, or is it easier dating?
It depends what you want.
Yeah.
Like, it depends what you want and where you are. Like, you can date a lot of people, you can be healthy in your dating thing, but you have to just know yourself and what you want, what you're going to put up with, what you're not. But there's a lot of, like, I think it's like a lot of this big learning curve we didn't have. And we're all in it. We're all learning together. But, you know, more and more people getting married, more gay people getting married, having kids, finding people. But I think that after that point, they know how to be with somebody.
Yeah.
But there's shit that happens. And I think, like, I used to be against open relationships. I still won't want to be in one, but I get it.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you want to be in one?
Because I'm very jealous. But I think we can, like, do things together. But I don't want to worry about, like, where are you? But I don't know. It's not a thing, because I feel like if it did happen, I would just be like, it just had to fall in. But I see why people do it. Just to answer that question about the flavors, I've seen people who were, like, in love, married. They pick each other every day. But it's okay if the one goes on dates. It's okay if they sleep with other people. And I feel like that just eliminates that whole question of, how do you date and taste all the flavors?
Yeah.
But I don't, like, you know, we have, like, a stigma against that. But I'm just, like, they're making it work. And they'll tell you about it. It's not, like, a thing anymore. And I'm like, well, if I'll have a threesome just randomly out here, I guess if it's, like, safer and comfortable, it'd be like, well, there's already two of us. Let's, you know, people do that. And they seem to be together forever.
I think it works. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it'd be in that such a scenario either. But it's...
I would just have to be like, I don't know. I'm not saying it won't work. I'm not saying, but I just, like, I'm too lazy to even, like, I'm like, we're in a relationship. Let's just do it, because now we got to find other people.
And think about them.
I like this.
If you think of your X amount of time in the city, what do you think is missing in the gay dating scene here?
I don't think there's anything missing in the gay dating scene. I just wish there was more resources and support for everybody. More like, I wish there was, like, older people. Like, who's the oldest gay person you know, personally?
I don't know.
Are they over 40?
I know. Well, I don't know anyone old.
Yeah, but you know, like, really old. Like, you have people who are straight to pass wisdom down, you know?
I think that's a good question. I've never been asked that question.
No, I don't think anybody asks or thinks about it. I know there's some people, but, like, even if you do know a 50-something-year-old gay person, you don't know a lot of them. But those are people who live, and that's not even old. Mm-hmm. I think the oldest one I know is this guy named William. I don't know how old he might be, in his 60s. Okay. But I went to visit his, he has this, like, he wants to archive all this Black gay information. He has stuff from, like, older than me, like, pamphlets from 50s and of, like, this Black queer. He has tapes. He has, like, a museum. But he's older. And he's like, I just want someone to archive it. Like, I'm too late. I can't, not too lazy, but I'm too old to do it now. Like, I don't have the energy.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his stuff is at the Schomburg, but he's the oldest one I know. And he still comes out. He'll make his way out, even though he's elderly, to be with people. But we all look at him like, who is this creepy old guy with the camera?
Mm-hmm.
But now I've gotten to know him. I was like, this is so sad. We just, like, shut him out. Like, he's just like, we just look at him as like, why is he around us?
Mm-hmm.
But he's like a wealth of information. And I feel like that would be nice to have. Like, to have, like, you know, every time you go out, it doesn't have to be about, sometimes it can be about culture or just learning something new.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, we need to be open to mixing communities, like within our own Black gay community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's be open to talking to those older folks at a bar. They don't all want to do now. People still do get frisky, and I was just like, you old? Are you old? Like, people will be old still, and I'm like, we are old. We are decades apart.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I guess that's the thing with being gay, but I think it was also nice to have, like, those old people tell you how it was, because you don't feel like, you know, I think a lot of times we're making up this gay history, like, or the gay history we'll have, because it's going to be so well documented. But we forget that there was, like, a lot of things that happened. And a lot of stories, like, Williams' thing was, when I die, I don't know where they're going to put this stuff so they can throw it out on the street. But mm-hmm. it's so, like, so much bad. Like, it's, like, file cabinets and tapes and things you just never thought existed that you never knew happened. Mm-hmm. And, like, happened maybe a few years before you were born.
Yeah.
So I would like to see just that, like, us be more of a, be open to knowing other different kinds of people than the ones you would date. Mm-hmm. And what we need in this dating world, I think we have everything. Like, we can go outside freely as gay folks and date. So you just have to find the person you're going to date now.
We'll be right back after a quick message. Hi, this is your host, Churchill. So Living with Churchill is a one-man team. Yes, I am the one in the background doing all of the producing, storytelling, trying to pull together the guests and all of the work it takes to put a podcast together. If you love the stories you've been hearing, if you've loved the communities we've brought together, check the description wherever you listen to this podcast. You'll find a link where you can leave me a small donation. All donations are really welcome and it will go a long way to helping me continue to tell stories, help me continue to pursue this passion, and can help me continue to bring you stories from all around the young professionals in this city. How's the pandemic changed things for you and the promoters and the whole scene?
Well, I think, you know, it changed things because everything stopped. Like, on March 15th, everything ended. There was, like, even doing Zoom parties and trying that, people weren't making money like they were. And that's for me, I felt very supported throughout this time, like, even by people, by the universe, because I'm like, that's when it really was, like, I was already on the cusp of feeling like, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, like, from here on out. This is working. I'm mm-hmm. getting things off, but I don't know how to make this into a thing. And everyone was like, I'll help you. I'll do this and that. But I'm like, I don't know where to start. I don't know what it is even. So March 15th, everything ended. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, now I don't know anything. Like, we only for a week or two. And it was months. And that day, someone stole my phone right after the party. So I was already like, now I don't really have anything. Like, I have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But I have insurance. So I just got another one the next day. That's when I started just posting constantly because I never really did that before. So I was just working, doing something. And I don't know, because I didn't have anything to do. And people were like, oh, can I send you some money? Can I do this and that? And I never really take it because I was like, when I need it, I'll let you know. But I don't really, I'm okay right now. And if people want to do that, okay, sure. I just started saying yes because people were just like, yeah, just you keep me entertained through this. And I was like, sure, here is my Cash App. And it was never a, like, crazy amount, but it was always the gesture of it that made me be like, that feels really special. It's like, I will never not think this time of my life is special because this is like the time where I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I kind of feel like I feel very lost, but I have all these people constantly telling me this thing that you're doing, we like it, we enjoy it. But I also feel like the thing I'm doing is also the people, like everything is a conversation. It's not just me. I couldn't do it if I was just like static thing.
Yeah.
It's also people coming to the party. It's people talking back and forth with me on Instagram. It's the people. So
that's very beautiful to hear. I keep telling everyone, like, if anything, that for me, one of my takeaways from this pandemic has just been, you know, the beautifulness in people's hearts.
Yeah,
I think it is unraveled people to show who they are and who they are not.
And we just have to remember, like, I guess it hasn't hit, like, maybe close to a lot of people, but so many people are dying.
Yeah.
So many people are losing time with people. If this year didn't happen, or if this didn't happen, they would still have these people.
Yeah.
Or they would still have these jobs and things. And sometimes I feel like very guilty. But like, I feel like this is the biggest blessing to make it through this year. We don't even know what's coming. But because I'm like, I haven't stressed. Like, I've been stressed before.
Mm-hmm.
I've been like down. I've been like, and that's when I thought I had direction in my life. But now I'm just like, I guess if you're in the middle of the ocean, what use does it to struggle and like try to, because you just got, you can't go anywhere. You just have to see what's going to happen.
Yeah. Just got to find a raffle and hold on to it.
You just have to believe that everything is going to be okay. Even if it's not great, you still have to, you're going to be alive through it. And you can start with, like, it might not look like you want it to look. And that was like a lot of my big things too. Cause I'm like, maybe things would like be different. I was always this person, like, I never was concerned about how things really looked because I didn't care because I knew who I was, like, I knew me.
Yeah.
Maybe not who, but I knew me. I knew I'm not a nasty person. I know I'm not, like, doing this and this and that, so I can act like I want to act. People can say what they want to say, but I know what I'm doing and what I'm not doing. And I think, like, now this has just let people, like, I don't know what people, where people are now. I know they're eager to come back outside, but I know things have to change. Like, I didn't do traffic for a very long time because the bar didn't open because they were scared to open. And I was like, well, yeah, everybody has a right to be. But when they, well, you had to realize, like, promoters weren't getting anyone. I don't think a lot of us got unemployment. Like, it was just one, it wasn't one of those jobs you could
do that with. Yeah.
And most promoters are making thousands of dollars a party. Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm like, beginning, but they like they can live like that. They can throw a few parties a year and be good for the year.
Mm-hmm.
So they lost all that. They lost pride. We lost all, like, pride and just all these little events. But I think to come back, I think it can come back, and it has to be just smart, because you have to expect, for something like this is our culture now. When people get sick, we're gonna act totally different, I think.
Yeah. And just people being there, it's going to be a level of trauma.
Yeah, people are not going to be on this stuff. Like, they're going to be sweat to sweat. We're not going to want that anymore for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I like more boutique experiences. Because, like, that's when, like, I want to do... If you do it smart, because... And before this happened, so many people, so many companies were coming into, like, the Black gay community, picking people out to create these content or create things, giving opportunities and stuff like that. But that's because... We're big users of the apps.
Yeah.
There's, like, a lot of money in this community. And it's like a community with so much money and so much like career and just notability and everything, but no representation. Like, it's one of those few communities. We don't get it on TV. Yeah. Very stereotyped still. But, like, if you just go on a trap yard or, like, a regular night, like, we've had singers, politicians, even porn stars. We had, like, lawyers, everybody. People who just wrote books, and everybody would be mixed in, because that's all we really, and it's always like that everywhere you go.
Yeah.
But I think if we see it back, like, if we get to see ourselves, which I think is coming, and I would love to be a part of, like, if we get to see ourselves on TV, our stories told by us, and not just having to be, like, the mixed couple on TV, or the Black gay couple on TV that's just, like, going through shit.
Yeah.
And I think if we see that more, we realize, like, and other people will realize, you know, the problem most queer people have is straight people. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with us. It's, like, wrong with, we can't be ourselves. And when someone's not fully themselves, you're always going to be a little iffy around them.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's a back and forth. And I think it's because, you know, we don't want to see a Black community. I don't know if we do want to see it or we don't want to see it on TV.
Yeah.
But I know we need to see it. I know there needs to be conversation, because there's going to be more and more gay Black people. And we're not going anywhere. We're always here. But at least the younger ones, who are more like, they can still be open and really gay.
Yeah.
But they still don't have anything, like, there's no, like, there's nothing to really show them themselves back. Like, there's no, like, you know, if there was, like, a Black queer That's So Raven, or even, like, a show, like, a primetime show, like, that featured, like, a Black queer family that was just, like, it, that was what you got. This is it.
Yeah.
We get characters and pieces that's coming into it. But I think we need to see that all as a community, and we need to see different types of queer people, just to be like, oh, they are here, and I do know someone like that.
Because we all do know someone like that. I totally agree. In our communities, in our families, when we hang out, the folks that are close friends.
And, like, could you imagine, like, coming out would be so much easier if you knew your mom saw something. Like, when I remember sitting on the couch, my mom watching Oprah, and this DL guy was talking about just being gay, and it just was not the most, like... He cheated on his wife. His whole life was just not great.
Yeah.
In the eyes of her. And that's her idea of gay people. And that's from Key West. So Key West is very gay. But a lot of people were victims of HIV and AIDS there, especially when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I had, like, one of my classmates had a blood transfusion. He died. So mm-hmm. It was just like, Key West, it always bombards you with gay. But if you're not gay, you're just like, why do we want to live like this? Because this is hell.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was still, like, I feel like it would be easier, even though, like, the relationship my mom and brother had, when they talk about relationships or bringing a girl home or this and that. And when it comes time for us to start, we're like, oh, yeah, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but it's not going anywhere. But I know, like, people get a lot of their information from media, like, a lot more than anything. They get a lot of their opinions from media.
Yeah.
And I think we're just a population that has so much that no one knows about. Like, mm-hmm. There's just so much talent, so much, even if you want to talk about it money-wise, there's so much money, and there's so much money we spend at that. And not just on, like, we spend a lot on vacations, clothes, and bars. And then I think home, like, but we don't see ourselves reflected back in those things. That's why I'm like, I guess you even see, like, a lot of white queer people have their TV shows, they have talk shows, they have things.
Yes.
To reflect them back.
As a promoter from your aspect, what are some crazy stories that you've experienced having gone through Harlem Nights so far?
I think the scariest thing I experienced was someone was roofing. And I've never seen anyone like, I've never seen that happen before. Mm-hmm. So I was literally talking to the person. It was one of my friends. They were, came in sober, went to use the restroom. It was like 15 minutes. And then they just came back. And I'm like, wow, you got drunk fast. And then it just all went downhill from there. They started foaming at the mouth. They were dead weight. We had to get them. And you know how packed and hot.
Yeah.
And then we had to get through the crowd and just like throw them on top of a dumpster and wait for the ambulance to come. And I was like, who would do that? Like, that made things scary for me because I'm like, okay, now there's just like, what the hell is going on here? Because this never was like even an issue before.
Yeah.
Because for a long time, it was the only weekly queer party. I mean, Castro had a thing, but it was more like Hispanic driven or Latino driven, Latinx driven.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still like, I think people would go, but Thursday was like, that was it. People kept telling me, like, I grew up in this neighborhood on this corner. I can never imagine this happening like mm-hmm. in my life. And I guess that worked for me because I'm like, I didn't know what was going on here. So I was just like, I need this money. Let's do this.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can see. I mean, if you think about Thursday night, that place overpours. I mean, the whole street, it's a yeah. whole block experience.
And I'm like, I don't know how people even put up with this. Like, I don't know how y'all do, but thank you. And then another time, someone brought their father there to come out to them. Oh. So I was like, you're a brave one, but this is a big thing. Like, this is like, you brought him around with all these niggas, and you're going to tell him you're gay. And his father ended up having a good time dancing to...
Oh, so when you said that, I felt anxious for that person. I don't know them at all.
But I know. When he told me, I was like, I have to get out of here. He might come through swinging. Like, I don't know what's going on. Like, this is a lot to spring on a person.
Yeah.
But the dad, and I thought that was a very beautiful thing because you don't hear like black families doing that or black people doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So he just had a great, he got a little ball and he found out his son was gay. It didn't like, I was like, my mom would need the time and mm-hmm. dislike everything. And then the very first memory I have Trappy Hour is like, you know, sometimes I do the little confetti poppers. It's my favorite thing to do mm-hmm. besides getting people drunk. And we did it. And they were playing Cranes in the Sky. And this woman was just crying. She's on the dance floor mm-hmm. having a release. And the confetti's falling on her. And it was just so beautiful to me. I was like, this is great. And then Issa Rae came a few times.
Yeah.
A couple of times, not a few, just two.
Yeah. And Tiffany Haddish, one time yeah.
She brought Tiffany Haddish. And yeah. I told him, the same friend who got roofied, mm-hmm. I told him, because he's like a very light, but he can talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to bother them. I'm like, everyone's already like this. So, but he was just like, he's that kind of personality. And he's like, well, why did you come here of all places? And he said, Tiffany was like, because she said it was like cool. She feels at home here, stuff like this, blah, blah, blah. And I think she meant the bar and not the party, but.
Mm-hmm.
She enjoyed it.
Wherever you have a bunch of black people all together just having a good time, the drinks is flowing, the music is good. That is home.
The first time she came was before Insecure came out, or mm-hmm. Rihanna right was coming out. That's she had a lot of buzz. And the second time she came like right after Rihanna's Diamond Ball mm-hmm. to Harlem Nights in their gowns. And I was like, this is crazy. I guess I get thankful for those things because
mm-hmm.
like I don't know. I don't think this happens to a lot of people, especially yeah. in New York, especially with nightlife, and especially there where it's located. So I just like, I just try to lean in because, and all the years I've tried to make fashion work in New York, this has worked, like it's done more for me. Like I've done more things through this. I'm in this generation of, like I'm 34, so I'm new, like everything I learned about, even being from Key West, which is a very gay place,
mm-hmm.
like, I always thought, like, oh, if you're gay, you're not going to have anything in life ever. So you can work. So I'm like, I'm trying to, because I don't want to be a loser. I'm trying to keep all that in. And, like, all these things I believed, even about gay people. And just trying to not be that.
Mm-hmm.
And even in college, like, I never dated in high school or did any of that. Because Key West is this small. And everyone, like, you can go outside. And then your mom will call you from work. I'm like, you outside? So, like, I just was, and I was shy. So I like my little corners and spaces. And New York provides that. You can be around a lot of people, but you can still be very, very like yourself. No one's really looking at you or for you. So I got to, I had to learn that. But this is like people like, if I date a few years older, I'm dating these guys who didn't get a lot of freedom, especially in their 20s, to be really gay.
Yeah.
Dating younger, I just ran into somebody who was like, not that I was talking to someone in a bodega, a young lady. She was 16 telling me about her queer experience. And she gets to just like be, and I was like, you know, I wish I had that when I was 16. Yeah. I'd probably be, I don't want to say I'd be a different person. Everything happens for a reason, but like, you don't have to think about that side of yourself. You can just grow. And that's the part, that's where we get to now. Like, we have this weird party area where Black queer people now, where we're so different. Different age groups, different age ranges. We're all going out. We're all out. Some of us are making a hell of a lot of money. Some of us are making no money. Some of us are artists. Some of us are like aspiring, but we're all crammed into these one little space, but makes for an interesting networking opportunity for everybody. But we deserve more than the little things we get. I don't know if we know that yet or we can see it yet. Because sometimes you just have to see that. I look at like, I follow straight promoters and then a lot of white queer promoters to see how they throw these mega events. And all I can think about is numbers. It just has to be numbers. Or maybe there's no opportunity, or maybe there's no desire for like a mega Black gay event. I don't know. So I'm trying to figure that out. Like how do, because you know, you, I don't want to just do something. I want to know how do we do it and make it us.
What a great conversation. If you enjoyed today's episode and podcast, please rate and review on Apple and Spotify podcasts. It takes listeners like you that keep the podcast going. And most importantly, as always, be kind to yourself.